We're learning details today about a President Obama trip to Cuba, the first for a sitting U.S. president since the Roaring Twenties. From Marketplace in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. The White House today is expected to unveil plans for President Obama to visit Cuba in the coming weeks. Indications are this will be part of a longer Latin American trip. Republican presidential candidates, including already Mr. Rubio and Mr. Cruz, think a Cuba visit for a president is inappropriate. And there's a diplomatic piece of this as Havana and Washington move to normalize political relations. Marketplace's Kimberly Adams is on the line from Washington. Kimberly, tell me about the business side of this.
David, there's actually been quite a bit of action on improving trade and business relations. Just this week, we found out on Monday the Treasury Department had given approval to an Alabama company to build a factory in Cuba. It's a $5 to $10 million plant that would build small tractors. And then on Tuesday, the U.S. and Cuba signed a deal restoring commercial air traffic between the countries. Now, don't get too excited, David. Travel for tourism is still technically banned, but it is getting easier to go there. The Obama administration has really been pushing hard to improve those trade relations. For example, it's looking for more opportunities for American companies on the island and things like better internet access for Cubans. But the administration still has to hammer out details on how these setups would work, like whether U.S. companies can hire locals on their own or if they have to go through the government.
Marketplace's Kimberly Adams, thank you very much. Walmart is the biggest private employer in the U.S. It's the biggest brick-and-mortar retailer on the planet, but enough with the superlatives. These days, Walmart has been scraping for profit after a middling holiday shopping season in the U.S. and the need to pay its employees more. As Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports, Walmart's battling a changing retail landscape.
Walmart is a retail giant trying to charge into the future, some say with old-school stores and strategies.
They are not the innovators anymore.
Charles Fishman is author of The Walmart Effect.
They created the retail ecosystem. Now the retail world is sort of changing out from under them.
Mark Cohen at Columbia University points to e-commerce as an example.
They're very proud of Walmart.com, which is enormous and has been growing 20 to 30% a year. But at the end of the day, they're still a tremendous also-ran in contrast with Amazon,
which also has low prices and no stores to pay for. Walmart's raising worker pay this year, which might eventually boost retention and morale, says Fisher. But there's another problem.
Half of Walmart's customers are the average American.
And lately, average Americans have had a hard time affording even the discounted stuff at Walmart. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Let's check the numbers. Things are mixed. The 100-share index in London is down 0.2%, but Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are up 0.5% in the case of the Dow, as if the Dow were up 80 points. From those short-term numbers to a longer-term view now, we know that investors in the fossil fuel industry have been living a nightmare for the past 18 months. For the green crowd, it's not the time for schadenfreude. Even with the big agreement in Paris in December, in which the world united to fight climate change, alternative energy ventures have also been suffering amid low global growth and low energy prices in general. Let's get some context here from Matthew Weatherly White, Managing Director at the Caprock Group, who focus on this field of impact investing. He joined me from Boise, Idaho, where I found him feeling philosophical and sticking to his sense that sustainable energy wins in the end.
If you accept the premise that was generally agreed to in Paris, that 2 degrees Celsius is the maximum rise that the globe can accept without making major dislocations in the way the global economy works, then you have to recognize that there's a possibility that all the known reserves that we have simply won't be able to be burned, because then we will not be able to keep global temperature rises below the 2 degrees Celsius.
This is a complicated moment for someone like you who is devoted to more sustainable investing. On the one hand, it's probably pretty easy to make the case to your clients, you know, get out of fossil fuel stocks. They're having a horrible time. But alternative energy, those stocks are a little tough to sell right now because they're not doing so well.
Yeah, they've been crushed as well. But more broadly, we are moving from a carbon-intensive economy to a less carbon-intensive economy. That transition is always lumpy, right? Whenever you're moving from an entrenched industry into something that's a little bit unknown, you get a lot of complications. Alternative and renewable energy is a tech play. And by that, I mean with technology, increased utilization results in lower unit prices. So if you're a consumer, you're going to choose something that gets cheaper the more it is used. But But that's really problematic for the entrenched businesses. You know, fortunes will be made just as surely as fortunes will be lost in this transition. And the trick is figuring out which side you're on.
But where does that leave your field, impact investing, including environmental, social, governance, that is to say ESG criteria in your money choices? As you acknowledged just now, alternative energy isn't the great poster child for getting rich these days.
Well, it depends on where you're playing in that, right? The players that are starting to circle this world are way, way down the road in terms of who they are. Goldman Sachs acquired Imprint Capital. Imprint is a boutique advisory firm doing some really interesting consulting for some of the largest foundations in the country, all around impact investing. And BlackRock, and BlackRock's the largest asset manager in the world. 2 years ago, 90% of the people inside BlackRock were skeptics, and 10% were very enthusiastic about the notion of incorporating ESG metrics into their investment decisions. Today, it's flipped. So if that transition happened in just 2 years, what does that say to us about what's happening on Wall Street? And I think the answer is pretty obvious. There's a big question mark over the notion that one can continue to operate as if the environment and social consequences of your business were irrelevant.
Matthew Weatherly-White is Managing Director at the CapRock Group, focusing on impact investing. Matthew, thank you.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
And we led with news President Obama is going to Cuba in the next few weeks. The last time a U.S. president visited there was in 1928. Calvin Coolidge was a famously low-key and taciturn man, and a contemporaneous account in the Saturday Evening Post from the last presidential visit to Havana describes the whole trip as, quote, dull, not even a press conference, apparently. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.